If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Kaya Biz with Google at 4P.
On Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
It's 31 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Next time you jump onto a flight and go anywhere, domestically, just perhaps pay attention to the environment at the airport. Not because there's any danger, but it does appear as though there are new reports from the Airports Company of South Africa that has warned that it's faced with a potential shortage of jet fuel. And this, we understand, is due to an exogenous pressure point where there's a dispute between the South African Revenue Service, SARS, and petroleum companies. Now, we're going to take a look at this twofold. Firstly, understanding what the dispute is, how this leads to a jet fuel crisis in South Africa. Then in a moment, we're going to take a look at how jet fuel and influences ticket prices in South Africa, especially when it comes to our access to it as consumers. To start us off, we join on the line by Group Executive for Operations Management at AXA, the Airports Company of South Africa. That's Terence Delamoni. Such a pleasure to have you with us, Terence, and thank you so much for your time. Truly appreciate your patience with us this evening, sir.
Good evening.
Fantastic. Terence, you're live on air. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate your patience with us this evening for this critical conversation. Perfect.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Terence, I guess just start us off in fully comprehending the warning that you've shared around the potential crisis around jet fuel. Help us understand why this is the case.
Okay, so thank you. This relates to, firstly, OR Tambo International Airport. And just by way of background, jet fuel, OR Tambo consumes almost 3,500 cubic meters of jet fuel a day. With the current traffic volumes, pre-COVID, that was in excess of 4,000 cubic meters a day. OR Tambo is primarily served by the inland refinery, which means that it's the product that it gets is really refined in South Africa from the inland refinery, and about 70% of that product then is utilized at OR Tambo. The balance is really from imported product, which comes in primarily from Durban, but there's also stock coming in from Mozambique, Matola, and that's really via rail. So the situation that we have is that inland refinery is going through, sometime between May and June, it will be going through a planned maintenance shutdown for a period of about 6 weeks. And that means that the normal supply that we receive from that refinery will obviously not continue. However, that in itself would not pose a problem because it's normal in the industry for refineries to shut down for maintenance and business must go on as usual. However, the contingency or the alternative means of supply then whilst that refinery is in shutdown would be then to bring more fuel up from Durban, the coast. Mm-hmm. And one of the key means of bringing that fuel up in the quantities that are required is through the multi-product pipeline. So it's a pipeline that runs all the way from Durban Harbour through to Jameson Park and then through to OR Tambo. Okay. And so what's exacerbated the planning for the shutdown is that there has been a dispute between the South African Revenue Services and the petroleum industry, or largely the fuel companies that actually bring the product up from the coast. The details of that is quite technical in nature, and it's actually will be best explained by those entities themselves. But essentially what it meant was that until those matters were resolved, that pipeline would not be able to be utilized to bring up to bring that fuel through. So that was essentially the key problem statement, if I could put it that way. Where then as the Airports Company South Africa, we were informed of this by the South African Petroleum Industry Association. Mm-hmm. And obviously we became very concerned that, you know, without that supply coming in during the shutdown of the plant for maintenance, it's really going to be quite catastrophic for aviation.
Understood.
I'm sure we'll get into the details, but I'm glad to say that, you know, it's good progress has been made.
Oh.
And in fact, yes, and in fact, you know, between SARS and the petroleum industry, they've come to some arrangement. It's a temporary arrangement, from what I understand, that enables then the petroleum industry to bring through that fuel from the coast, and that will certainly start alleviating then this concern that we had.
Got you. I'm glad that there has been progress. Does this mean that we found an alternative way to either move the fuel, or that the dispute has been managed by the petroleum companies and SARS?
So the alternative mechanism to move the fuel, so there's primarily two ways of bringing it from the coast. One is rail, and the other is pipeline. So rail, the rail option still continues to be an option. In fact, it's the option that's still used, but the quantum of volume that you can bring up by rail obviously is not sufficient to meet the demand that we would require when the Natrex refinery goes on shutdown.
Makes
so therefore,
sense.
The use of the multi-product pipeline is the best option. So now that pipeline was previously in use. If you can recall, 2 years ago in April, May 2022, we had those major floods in KZN, and the rail infrastructure was damaged, and we couldn't get fuel via rail. And then the multi-product pipeline was used, and it was able to bring in those huge quantities that actually got us out of a very difficult situation at that point in time. So since then, until about September last year, that pipeline was in use. Then this dispute between SARS and the petroleum industry was, you know, while that was trying to be being resolved,
yes.
The pipeline was not used. But now that, you know, SARS has given some temporary permission based on discussions that they've had, it means that we, you know, it'll alleviate the situation during this shutdown.
I'm glad that there has been positive progress, but I'm intrigued to answer a question that might that many of our listeners are asking, and one of our listeners on social media, at TD Malindi, asks if the possibility of a jet fuel crisis does lead to individuals and businesses facing the consequences to spend more on air flights. And how is this crisis perhaps going to have an effect on tourism? So I guess we're understanding correctly, if we can't get the jet fuel to the necessary airport, we can't fuel the aircraft, that leads us into a pricing dynamic or a potential pricing war that has far-reaching implications. Is this a concern that has been reviewed by AXA and some of your stakeholders in the industry?
I think the pricing of jet fuel and the cost of jet fuel goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that this particular crisis in itself leads to any increased cost of jet fuel. Now that the solution has been found and the most viable and economical means of bringing that fuel up has been found, that should not impact. But however, you're quite right, because the cost of jet fuel is a significant input cost to airlines. And there are many factors that impact that cost of jet fuel. And it primarily starts with just the cost of the raw material, which is really crude oil. And if there are, you know, geopolitical tensions in the world, which we are experiencing at the moment, the Russia-Ukraine issue is still happening, and there's many other events like this around the world. There's dynamics around just the pricing of crude oil. And then there's been many logistical challenges that can also impact the supply and the pricing of jet fuel. So what's happened in the country is that pre-COVID, we had more capacity in terms of jet fuel refining. So if you recall, we had refining capacity in Durban in particular.
Yes.
Where we had two major refineries that were refining jet fuel product. So at least that was in country. We always had then the inland refinery at Natchez. And then in Cape Town, there was also a refinery, which is now up and running again. So mm-hmm. Astron refinery in Cape Town. But the two refineries in Durban are no longer a refining product. You know, those plants are actually used more as storage facilities. So we're seeing more product being imported, you know. So that will also affect the dynamics in terms of pricing, the spot price of fuel. So there's many factors that impact it. And obviously our exchange rate, this this fluctuation in our exchange rate and then the spot price of crude oil will be impacted, as I've indicated before. And certainly, you know, as the price of fuel increases, airlines have to recuperate their costs, so they will start charging higher price for tickets. And that could have the impact of, you know, of reducing demand and thereby stifling growth. So it's quite a it's something that the aviation industry, in particularly the airlines, have to keep a very close eye on.
Mm.
In fact, the input cost of fuel has, you know, increased for an airline over the years since COVID.
100%.
And that's something they have to manage very carefully.
I'm glad you mentioned this, Terence, and it's really provided a lot more perspective just to understand the many aspects and themes that are driving the concerns around what could be a jet fuel crisis, not only in terms of pricing, but also in terms of availability and even the movement of that jet fuel from various places to new markets, specifically the airports that we do require. Terence, now that I have you on the line, as you've mentioned, we've seen some progress. Does this mean that we have been able to avert a crisis? But is it for the short to medium term or still sustainable?
Well, I think, yes, the immediate crisis that was being referred to last week, I believe, has been averted because the South African Revenue Service has provided some guidance to the oil petroleum companies, and they are now able to inject that fuel. In fact, I'm led to believe that there's fuel now starting to come through. So that averts the immediate issue that we have, and also, you know, should take care of the shutdown period, which means the volumes will come through. However, the issue of jet fuel is not an easy one, and I think it's one of the aspects in the aviation industry that there's no total comfort around at the moment, because I've indicated to you, you know, what's happened around how fuel is supplied from refining in the country to a bit of imported fuel. So there are many dynamics within that value chain that could negatively impact, which means that we could have at some point a fuel shortage. However, all of the role players, including AXA, we try to mitigate that. And one of the main mitigants is so if OATAM uses 3,500 cubic meters of fuel a day,
yes,
the rule of law is that, or the rule of thumb, should I say, is to try and at least hold about 5 days worth of stock.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if there's any immediate crisis or any short-term operational disruptions, the show can go on and the business would continue. However, I think at a more strategic level, what we need to see is a bigger drive by, you know, again, the relevant role players. That this is where the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy would play a big role, together with the oil, the petroleum industry.
Yes.
Is to see, you know, can we have a strategic stock holding of refined jet fuel? Or can we increase that buffer stock? So when we have these short-term interruptions and issues, we can absorb that without us having to go into a crisis mode, you know, every time that
100%.
Happens. So I think there's a lot of that needs to happen, and for us to get to a very comfortable point, which at this stage we're not there yet,
100%.
So, yeah, I think that's at the moment.
Terence, really appreciate the update you've given us and looking forward to hearing more on this going forward. We'll leave it there for today, but truly appreciate the perspective that you've given us in terms of understanding the industry-wide dynamics when it comes to adequately managing what could be a jet fuel crisis. It's been averted for now, but we do need to find more long-term and sustainable solutions. That's Group Executive for Operations Management at the Airports Company of South Africa, Terence Delomani. While we now shift gears to speak to Guy Leach, who's an aviation analyst. And as you might have heard, Terence gave us some context that the pricing of fuel, there's a lot more complexities around it. But this is where we're going to take a look at it from a consumer point of view. Every time you book your flight, domestically specifically, do take a look not only at what you're paying for the ticket, but margins and taxes that typically come in through there. Guy Leach, who's an aviation expert, joins us now to give us some perspective as to how we should be, I guess, just comprehending some of the challenges when it comes to fuel and how it does account for the costing of your ticket and the dynamics that impact and influence the margins of airlines in the country. Guy, always a pleasure to speak to you, and thank you so much as well for your patience with us tonight. An intriguing conversation we've had with Terence, who really added some color and perspective to this conversation. What I'm keen to understand from your end is the consumer impact through understanding costings from an aviation sector impact.
Yeah, hi, Gugu, and nice to be with you as always. Well, you can't underestimate the value or the importance of fuel pricing and airline seat pricing, because in any well-run airline, the cost of fuel is as much as 30 or even 40% of the total operating costs of that airline. Mm. Interestingly enough, the more efficient the airline is, the greater the proportion of costs that go on fuel, because all the other costs have been kept under control. Mm. So if you've got an extremely well-run airline like Air Link or Semair or FlySafair, the cost of fuel is the single largest determinant, because they're keeping other costs under control. And Terence gave us a lot of valuable information in his little talk about fuel stocks and reserves. And I think that the important thing to remember is that if the crisis worsens, or if, in other words, there really is a full-blown shortage of fuel, then the number of flights is going to be reduced, and that will increase demand for the remaining flights.
Oh, boy.
So what then happens is that airline ticket pricing industry is a science. It's one of the most perfect forms of supply and demand capitalism you can find, because about 30 years ago now, they moved on to what we know you can call the dynamic pricing model, or what's also known perhaps more accurately as active yield management. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it varies the price of a ticket continuously depending on what the demand for that particular flight is. So if demand shoots up, then the prices can absolutely shoot up. And the bad old days, or the good old days, if you like, and I don't know whether how many of our listeners still go to the movies, uh-huh, but when you go to the movies, everyone pays the same price for a ticket.
Yes, whether you booked last week or last night or today.
Yeah. But in the airline industry, you can have paid 1,000 rand for your ticket, or worse, you could have paid 3,000 rand for your ticket, and the person sitting next to you, who may even have a slightly better seat because it's in the window or the aisle, has only paid 1,000 rand for exactly the same ticket. Mm-hmm. And that's how dynamic ticket pricing works. It depends when you book your ticket and how much demand there is. So if the airlines start cancelling flights or combining flights, then I'm afraid that the bottom line is the ticket prices are almost certainly going to go up.
Mm. This raises some concerns then, just in terms of not only competitiveness, but affordability, especially in a market like South Africa, where we already know that South African consumers have been constrained.
You know, you're right on the button with affordability, because pre-COVID, you could buy seats on the low-cost carriers like Kulula or Mango or FlySafair to, you know, Port Elizabeth, Gqeberha, or Durban, or wherever the case may be, for about as little as 400 rand if you booked it early enough and at the right time and an unpopular flight. That made it possible for people to, as I say, you know, go and visit Granny for their birthday, for her birthday. Now ticket prices have become typically three times as much as they were. And it's just pushed the affordability right out of the market. And that is why South Africa has lagged the rest of Africa, and indeed the rest of the world, in terms of getting back to pre-COVID levels. We're still languishing around about 90-95%, whereas we should be at 120% of pre-COVID levels, given the growth that should have happened in the intervening period. And almost all of that can be blamed on affordability, because there's now only really the two low-cost carriers left. Only Fly Safair left, and of course Lyft has stepped into the market, although it's still a relatively small operation. So the demand for seats is a lot more constrained, or a lot tighter than it was, and thus ticket prices are much higher. And at the same time, as Terence mentioned, ticket prices are very vulnerable to both, obviously, the cost of crude oil and then the cost of jet fuel, and also the rand-dollar exchange rate, because most of an airline's costs are, in fact, dollar-denominated. So, you know, you're paying for maintenance, you're paying for aircraft leases in dollars. And if the rand weakens as it has, well, again, it's a huge driver upwards of prices.
This is so intriguing, because in my mind I'm thinking here the margins of these airlines must be so thin, and given that you've mentioned, you know, crude and the price of jet fuel plays a significant influence in the cost factor, are these margins regulated, or is there room for some level of flexibility just to ensure that aviation companies can survive?
Well, that's why we've seen so many airlines fail, because South Africa pioneered in Africa the so-called open skies or liberalized market, where the airlines were just left free to compete with themselves. And that is why the airlines like Comair used to complain so vociferously about an uneven playing field, with favoritism for SAA and SA Express as the state-owned carriers. Because really, if you think about it, the only thing that differentiates one airline from another is either price, or if you want to be facetious, the size or the width of the, you know, the cabin crew smile. So beyond that, you know, everything else is pretty much the same. And you'll end up paying for, you know, your lunch or your snacks or whatever else, and your extra baggage, and choosing a seat if it's a low-cost carrier, all the little ancillary benefits that they put in. So absolutely, the margins are absolutely paper thin. And that is why, for instance, last week I needed to fly Cape Town, Johannesburg. It was Joburg, Cape Town, on Thursday, and I couldn't believe how even as I was sitting looking at my computer to try and book a seat, the ticket price was almost doubled. And then I realized it was because of the Two Oceans race, because there's a massive demand for those particular seats. And that's how flexible the system is, which means that people are only competing on prices, and prices on margin are so thin. And that's why, I'll just rambling on here a bit, why SAA itself is such an impossibly difficult business for a government to run, because all airlines are incredibly capital intensive, if you think of the cost of acquiring and operating aircraft. And they are very technological intensive, or skills intensive, in terms of planning routes and operating them most efficiently and so on. Definitely. And yet the margins are absolutely paper thin. It is absolutely the worst possible set of conditions for a state-owned enterprise, of course. But yet, you know, we've got a government that's committed to SAA, and in some ways I suppose we can be grateful for that. At least it does provide a what we call a full service offering with business class seats. But let me just continue on.
Very briefly,
we're running out of time here.
Sure.
Okay. And that is that South African tourism has been enormously benefited by our liberalized environment, where ticket prices have been so low. So people travel, and tourism has really benefited, and has really created tourism as one of the single most important sectors of the economy. And as prices continue to go up, or as fuel supply is constrained, whether it's by necessary maintenance with Natref or whatever else, then a lot of pressure is put on people traveling from one end of the country to the other, and guest houses will suddenly start struggling, and, you know, the whole industry will take a lot of strain, and that's really going to be a big pity.
100%. Guy, always a pleasure speaking to you. Truly appreciate your time. And you've educated us on something that all of us will now be able to reference going forward, which definitely speaks to the dynamic pricing that we see on dynamic ticket pricing. So when you're praying for your seat, for your bag, to check in the bag, to actually have a meal, what about a snack? Hold on, you want priority? Now we fully comprehend some of these dynamics that happen in the system. Sheesh, it's an intriguing environment to be in. Thank you so much for your time as always there, Guy.
My pleasure.
Fantastic. That's Guy Leach, who joins us as an aviation expert and analyst. We also spoke to Terence Delamani, who's the Group Executive for Operations Management at the Airports Company of South Africa, essentially helping us contextualize what the concerns are around a jet fuel potential crisis and what it could mean from a ticketing and pricing point of view.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.